Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Boyd alongside Sean Wally, show number 72, bringing it to you week three in the NFL underway, and some excellent, excellent football games were played over the weekend, Sean Wally.
3+1 would be week four, Mr. Boyd, as teams are already on their bye week, including the world champion Seattle Seahawks and some teams even playing in other countries yesterday.
Oh man, you know what? I really have to, I'm on that Seahawks tip because you guys had the bye. So I was thinking of week three because you guys aren't playing until next week, man. I got to shake that off, but yes. Game across the pond in London, Wembley Stadium, Sean Wally, and man, what a debacle it was. I can't even begin to tell you the disgust that's going on. As you can imagine, it's kind of reaching all points around the globe. But here, the epicenter in Northern California, oh my goodness, the days are numbered for one D.A., Dennis Allen.
Now, Sean, you have backed Dennis Allen in the past. Are you ready to change directors of the Pirate Raider ship?
And yes, you're right, Sean. I have backed Dennis Allen. And as a matter of fact, I'm a believer in protocol. And I believe a believer in, you know, give the person a chance to prove their muster and what they're worth. And I believe that Dennis Allen has done the best that he possibly can. Now, do I believe in anybody getting fired? No, I think that that's a horrible thing. But would I fault Mark Davis for actually pulling the trigger, especially going into a bye week? No, I wouldn't fault him. And for those outside the Raider Nation, they would say, well, gosh, you know, hey, let it happen. What's changed? Nothing. It's the same old Raider hat. You guys go through coaches. You go through quarterbacks. You go through all kinds of stuff. So this wouldn't be any different. You guys are a losing franchise. And, you know, at this point of the season, I'm thinking that, you know, it's not a deserving label, but at the same time, if the shoe fits. And it's horrible, Sean, because, you know, the Raider Nation, the faithful, and as a matter of fact, you got a chance to see if any of you watched the game yesterday at Wembley Stadium in London, you would see that the Raider Nation stretches far across the country. It's all over the world, as there was silver and black in full effect at Wembley Stadium. And so it is just a travesty to have a team not perform. And that's the biggest thing, Sean. They did not perform.
What's it going to take to get these players to play even competitively?
You know, that's a good question because, you know, when Dennis Allen is in front of the podium and when he's talking to the media, he seems to be a person that is focused. He seems to be a person that's driven. But at the same time, it seems his words seem to fall hollow. And, you know, there was a big expectation for the Raiders to go over to a foreign country and get the chance to get away from, you know, the norm, you know, playing in the States and just go and show a strong performance. And for the Raiders to go over there and to do what they did. And I thought I've seen it all already. I mean, there are a couple of plays in the year. One that I can think of, James Jones caught a reception. I believe it was in week two. He's running up the field. He fumbles the ball, picks it back up, runs near the goal line, and then somebody pokes it out and he fumbles it again. I mean, the Raiders find a way to do the most obscure turnovers that you could possibly think of. And yesterday, Matt McGloin in the third quarter, the ball is snapped and it just goes right by him. And without fail, the Miami Dolphins defensive lineman, I can't remember who it is, Sean, but he picks it up in stride and rolls into the end zone for a touchdown. Just tragic things that are happening. And you're thinking, how in the world? I've never seen anything like that before in my life. And it's frustrating. It is very frustrating. And at some point, you know, if I'm the owner, I'm going to have to make a decision, because there are tickets to sell. There is a brand to try to lift up. There is a stadium that they're trying to vie for. And so, you know, Dennis Allen has not come up with his end of the bargain as far as showing progression in a solid football team.
Now, Sean, there have been some quote-unquote sources that have said Dennis Allen will be gone before his press conference on Tuesday. If that were to happen, what direction would you want Reggie McKenzie to go in?
Well, I mean, you know, to be honest with you, now the business side says, if I'm going to do something like this, especially going into a bye week, I do it swift and I do it quickly. And that would be the best thing, is to get this over with, have your next coach in place, which I believe, and everybody seems to believe, that is Tony Sparano, who is the assistant head coach on the football team right now. He has head coaching experience. He puts a stopgap into what's going on. Now, if you think that, hey, by having Tony Sparano in, that things would change, well, I beg to differ, and I want the Raider Nation to stop the presses for a minute, because I want us all to think back to the last time Tony Sparano was a head coach, I believe with the Miami Dolphins. It wasn't his finest hour. And so what Tony Sparano would be is he would be a stopgap. And again, keep in mind, even though Dennis Allen is fired, Tony Sparano is a part of the Dennis Allen coaching staff, so the beat would go on. And so, you know, I'm thinking that maybe Tony would step up in a leader, more of a leadership role, and get something out of these guys. But, it, you know, I don't see any change anytime soon as far as, you know, as far as if the new coach or when the new coach comes in, that the Raiders get any better.
And Sean, even going to the San Francisco 49ers, there's talk there from one Deion Sanders that the players in 49er land are tired of Jim Harbaugh, even though they rallied and got the win yesterday at Levi's Stadium, and you were there working for Fox.
Yeah, so there are a lot of legends that are actually coming out and saying it's not just Deion Sanders, and of course Deion Sanders has a strong view for with the San Francisco 49ers, from when he played and had a Super Bowl with the 49ers. He also has a player in Michael Crabtree, who he nurtures and is what he calls one of his babies, one of his sons. And then, of course, you know, you have other athletes that are coming out and talking. So it's not just Deion Sanders. You have Trent Dilfer that actually came out and said something on ESPN that was to the effect that, you know, watching that offense yesterday, you know, he cringed because there wasn't cohesiveness. There wasn't any fluidity that was going on. And, you know, it just looked like they were going backwards. And, you know, with those things being said, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. And as a coach, you know, if I'm Jim Harbaugh, I'm thinking, man, what in the world? You know, why are these guys saying what they're saying? But at the same time, you know, I have to take it with a grain of salt, because I have a team to coach. They're 2-2 right now. They're not playing the greatest of football, but they're still in the hunt. And so, you know, if I'm Jim Harbaugh, I just keep going at it and developing that cohesiveness.
And as for the contest, it was interesting to see that the Eagles and their vaunted Chip Kelly offense had some struggles.
Well, you know, the biggest thing was, is we thought that the Philadelphia Eagles would come in because they were most talked about as far as being a scoring machine in the fourth quarter, and the San Francisco 49ers are not. And up until that point, you know, San Francisco hadn't scored a point in the fourth quarter, and the roles reversed, and I thought that that was very interesting. For one, you're talking about that sporadic offense. Trent Dilfer was talking about that sporadic offense. In the fourth quarter, San Francisco actually got a few drives going to where, you know, they look like a solid ball club. And so, you know, yeah, it was. The score, 26-21, if you would have, you know, pick this and mark this in preseason, you would have said, yeah, that's about right. But as far as the high expectations for the Philadelphia Eagles and the way they are going or were going up until the loss, you would have thought that, you know, the score would have been something like, you know, 28-10. But San Francisco did an excellent job on holding serve on their home field.
We've got a big show for you tonight, show 72 here of On the Double. Let's go on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines, and it's my pleasure to welcome in a football coaching legend here in the state of Washington. That is Keith Gilbertson. Keith, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Great. Thank you for having me on.
Keith, no doubt about it. It's great having you here on the show. And, of course, you know, where Sean talked with you over this past weekend was at the University of Washington versus Stanford game. And so, you know, how did you enjoy that, enjoy the game this past weekend?
Well, I liked a lot of it. There were some things happened that I left shaking my head about, but I really enjoyed a lot of it. I thought the Husky defense played great football the entire game. You know, some crazy things happened at the end of that football game, which, you know, where people are going to talk about, I think, for a long time.
Yes, yeah, and so, you know, about 5 minutes left, I believe, Stanford got on the board again, going ahead 20-13. But some of the things that you were talking about was how Stanford moved up and down the field. Am I correct?
Well, I didn't think Stanford moved the ball at all compared to how they have been in the past. I thought the Washington defense played great football, and I thought the Washington defense was put in a really tough position by the failed fake punt.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's the way it goes. But at the time, it's 13-13, and your defense has held serve all day. Tough to put them in that kind of situation with a short field.
Now let's talk about that. Of course, the Huskies were coming in 3-0 at the time. I'm sorry, 4-0 at the time, and you know, this past offseason, of course, there's a lot of turmoil that was going on with Steve Sarkisian going down to USC and Chris Peterson being implemented as the head coach. In your honest opinion, how great of a move was that for the University of Washington?
Well, I think Chris Peterson's got a tremendous resume. I think he's a quality get. It was too bad that Steve felt compelled to leave, but at the same time, you get when you can attract someone like Chris Peterson, that's a real quality hire. And I still think it's a quality hire. It's going to take them some time to get it the way they want it. Nobody's going to just take over a job and it's going to instantaneously work and be right. If it is, it's probably not going to work for the long run. Better to build it the way you want it done, get people thinking the way you want them to think, playing the way you want them to play. And that takes time to do that, particularly with young people these days. It takes a long time to kind of get them convinced that what you're doing is the best for them. And if they do it the way you ask them to do it, they'll be successful.
Now, Coach, you talk about it taking time at the college level. How much time does Chris Peterson need to get his recruits in and his style of players until the Huskies can be thought of as an elite team again in the Pac-12?
Well, you know what? I think they got a pretty good team there right now. First of all, I mean, I think they have a really tremendous defensive football team, and those young DBs are going to get better and better all season. They have a veteran offensive line that probably hasn't played up to what their potential is. You know, their issues will be how fast they develop the quarterback and how they develop some kind of vertical or upfield passing game, you know, going into the next 8 games of their season. They're 4-1, so there isn't anything out there goal-wise that they can't achieve, but they've got to get better. And in terms of just, you know, building your kind of program, you said the magic word, recruiting. You know, the way it works now is that you don't have much time anymore. The old saying is, well, I'll tell you in 4 or 5 years how we're doing. Fans, media, that doesn't work. You're going to have to show some results pretty soon. But I think Chris certainly deserves time to get his guys in there and recruit a few classes And then let's just see where it takes us down the road. Let's not knee-jerk react after one game.
Coach, how much has the game of college football changed in the two-plus decades that you've been around the game?
Oh, man. You know, I mean, I think the biggest thing now is how much passing people are able to do and how they spread the field with the formations and the multiple formations and multiple receiver packages. And right now, if you look at college football, if you can't rush the passer and you play in a league where people are prolific throwers, you're in trouble. To me, the biggest issue now is open field tackling for the defense and pass rush for the defense. Now, if you can rush the passer and open field tackle like Stanford, you got to have a chance. You're going to have a chance to have a great season. But if you're not good at those things, offenses with the way they move it now and the read zone and the passing and the 3-and-1 plays that all come off, and you're going to have a tough time defending all that. So I think that's the biggest change. You know, when my years of Idaho and Washington, we were in a lot of trip sets, a lot of one back, no back, but we were kind of unique in that. There weren't a lot of people doing it. Now it's every weekend, the whole game. You turn the television on, watch 20 college games a weekend. That's all you see is spread formations, multiple receiver packages, and a lot of prolific throwers in college football.
Keith Gilbertson joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express, and Coach talking about your coaching days, and of course you, your last stint was with the Cleveland Browns as a scout. I'm listening to what you're saying now, and
I was never a scout. I don't know where that got going. I never was a scout.
You're on the coaching staff.
Yes. So
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how that got started. I spent a little time in player personnel, but I was not a scout. I was the director of pro personnel.
Oh, okay.
For a short time, and then as soon as someone left the staff, I went and worked again on the coaching staff, which is really the reason I went there.
Well, that's even better.
Yeah, it was fine.
And so I guess what my question is knowing what you know and how the game has evolved, and you talked about how there was a uniqueness in how the offense was run at the University of Washington, it sounds to me that you still have that fire that you have what it takes to actually lead a team. If you were able to lead a team, how well do you think that you would do?
Well, I don't know if I ever would want to. I mean, what I miss is being a coordinator, design an offense, develop an offense, and calling and implementing on a game day, making the adjustments that you make. Those are the things I miss. Sitting in the big chair and being a head coach, I really don't miss that much. It's difficult to coach. Your media demands, your alumni demands, your speaking demands, and then just the little things, the problems, the issues that you have to deal with all the time really take a lot of the fun at times out of coaching. So what I miss is the offense, the playbook, play design, the game, coaching the game during the week. Those are the things I miss.
Now, Coach, I want you to put your GM hat on. And I don't know if you were listening before you got on the show here, but Sean Wally and myself were talking about the rigors that are going on in the NFL in Northern California with the Oakland Raiders. If you were the GM, you know, what kind of things would need to be done to turn that franchise around?
Well, that franchise has been in turmoil for, I don't know, a decade, 2 decades.
Yeah,
guess is I think the last time the Raiders were relevant, they made one Super Bowl appearance about 2002, but before that and after that, they've been almost irrelevant.
Right.
You know, they had a chance and were playing much better with Tom Cable, but for some reason, Al Davis decided he didn't like Tom Cable and he ran him out of there. And they haven't played well at all since then. So I just think it's a franchise that's in total turmoil. I don't know if I feel very good about the ownership. I don't certainly feel good about anything to do with the Raiders from what they did to Tom Cable. So if I had my GM hat on, I might blow the whole thing up and start over again.
And, of course, you talking about Tom Cable. You and Tom have a relationship going back to Snohomish High School.
That's right.
My dad coached him,
and I recruited him to Idaho, and then I coached him. And then he was with me a couple of stops when I was a head coach. He's a great football coach. He's a great football coach. He's a great football guy and a great person. And he had the Raiders going the right direction. They were tough, competitive. And then whatever made Al Davis pull the plug on him, I don't know. But I haven't felt very good about the Raiders since, and I probably won't.
Keith Gilbertson joining us here on The Double. And, Coach, you know, being originally from Snohomish, I've got three cousins in the family that all graduated from Snohomish High School. So getting the word out about Snohomish is a good thing, and a lot of good people like yourself have come from there. And I'm curious, what do you recall about your days as a graduate assistant and then moving on and getting that first coordinator position? How did that feel for you? Did you feel like you had arrived and you had begun to get where you wanted to be?
Well, I mean, when you're a graduate assistant, basically you do a lot of the jobs nobody else wants to do. So you know, you're busy and you're working, and then you get a chance to have your own position, and that's always a great feeling. But then I got a coordinator's job really soon after I became a position coach, and then I felt like, whoa, this is really in. I'm really in it now. You feel the pressure to do well, and you've got a responsibility not just the position you coach, but the other guys on the staff, and then all the other guys on that side of the ball. In my case, always offense. So I mean that my first coordinator's job was exciting, but at the same time, when you get it, you realize, well, this is a responsibility, and I got to do a good job at it.
Who have been some of your biggest mentors and guys that have helped you along the way?
Well, I have a star-studded cast of people that have helped me, you know. First of all, nothing in my career would have ever happened if Coach Don James didn't give me an opportunity to be on his staff at Washington. In fact, I was with him twice at Washington. My last stop at Washington, we won the national championship, went to three Rose Bowls in a row. But my career really got a start and would not have had the things happened nice for me and my family if Coach James hadn't given me a chance. And then, you know, I spent 5 years with Bruce Snyder, who was as fine a football coach as ever. And God bless Coach Snyder. He's passed away. I spent a lot of years with Dennis Erickson. Grew up with Dennis. I've known Dennis since we were young. And instrumental in me learning the passing game. And just was great for me and a great friend. We're still best of friends, and we speak weekly. And then, you know, I was around some guys in the USFL, Ray Malavasi and Sid Gilman, John Hadle, tremendous football coaches. And then last but not least, a guy who really helped me a lot was Mike Holmgren. I spent 7-8 years on Coach Holmgren's staff, and there's nobody better as a person, there's nobody better as a coach. So I've got an all-star team of guys that have helped me, and trust me, I've borrowed something from all of them.
Keith, now one of the things that you're doing now is you are doing the pregame with Como 1000. Of course, they have now taken back the reins as far as the Husky football, and of course, you are with one Greg Lewis, University of Washington, great. And past guests of On the Double, you know, it must be great to actually, you know, get a chance to be in that capacity, and of course, working with the former athlete.
Well, it's tremendous. It's a great thrill to be back with Greg. In any capacity, Greg was one of my favorite players that I ever coached, and he was a great player at the University of Washington. It's given me a chance. I've been away from Husky football for 10 years, and when I left, I was really kind of angry at him. Wasn't sure I'd ever go back, but lots of things have changed. I'm a little older, a little more mellow. And when I got the chance to go back and do this radio thing, I was excited about it because first and foremost, I get to see every week guys that I had coached in my 10 plus years at Washington. And it's always great to see him and reunite with him. So that has been a wonderful thing for me to be able to go back and reunite and reconnect with all the old Huskies.
Now, Coach, you had mentioned, leaving the University of Washington, and it probably wasn't on the best of terms. And, you know, was it, do you think it was because of the high expectations of coming after the Godfather and the Dog Father?
Well, that was long after Don had been gone. It was long after that.
Right. And so, but there are some, do you think there were huge expectations to actually live up to that? Because, you know.
Well, there's always that expectation at Washington. Once we raised the bar to that level of the national championship, national contender level, everybody that comes after that has to live up to that. Everybody knows that. So, but my complaints and my anger with them was the fact that I took over a job in August that was in turmoil. And I told them it's not going to get fixed in 10 months. Well, that was about 10 months later. They said, look, we're going to change this whole thing. So, I was mad as hell at them, to be honest with you. But at the same time, all those people that were there then have left. It's a new day at Washington. I'm excited about Chris Peterson and his staff and what they can do. Bygones, a lot of water under the bridge since then. And I went on and had a really great time coaching the next 7-8 years in the National Football League. So I have no complaints, and I'm glad to be back.
Coach, last one quickly for you. What is, looking back on your coaching career, what is your highest high?
Oh, I've had a lot of them. Come on. I coached in the Super Bowl with the Seahawks, 3-4 Rose Bowls with the Huskies, won a national championship. We won 3 championships in 4 years at Idaho. I took a Cal team to a postseason play my second year at Cal. So I've been very fortunate. At every stop, I've been lucky enough to be around lots of great coaches and lots of really, really fine players and have some success. So I would say all those, and I'm very grateful I had a chance to do all those things.
Coach Gilbertson, thank you for your time, your candidness, and it was a pleasure meeting you on Saturday at Husky Stadium. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
I appreciate it, guys. Enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Coach.
There goes coaching legend Keith Gilbertson. Great talking to him and all that he has done and the people he has met along the way.
Man, you talk about the successes that he just ripped off. And, man, he's been in Super Bowls, Rose Bowls, numerous college bowls. And so, man, that is awesome. I think it's great. I think it's awesome that he's on the sidelines, right, or at the games at the University of Washington. Be a great asset for that program, Chris Peterson and that program. So when we come back, we are going to have guest number 2, and that is Aaron Levine.
What?
So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
Some tags, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a come up. This is awesome.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you burn with the brush flame. Yeah.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Show 72 rolling along.
Definitely, man. And of course, our first guest, Keith Gilbertson. Man, what a great joy to have him on and, you know, getting a chance to, you know, talk about, you know, some of the successes that he has had as a coach. We didn't really get a chance to, you had mentioned a little bit about his grad assistant and how he got started, but just, you know, getting a chance to hear the evolution on his life, his career. I mean, man, Sean, it sounds like he still got it. Like he can still get in there and get guys to respond.
Well, Sean, I mean, you haven't reached the levels that Coach Gilbertson has, but you've got coaching in your background. You've got yourself being an athlete in your past. You still have that fire. You still have that desire. And for somebody like Keith, who has been there for decades on the field and decades teaching young men and professionals at the NFL level, that burn, I don't know that it ever goes away.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I was just talking with somebody about that as far as coaching, because when I decided to step away from coaching, and, you know, I had coached for some 14 years and I went cold turkey, and it's a drug. It's an adrenaline. And, you know, I didn't realize that till about a week later when, you know, I'm spending time with the family because that's what I wanted to do. That was the whole purpose of doing it. And there I am. I'm at the refrigerator. And I probably told this story hundreds of times, but it's it's one of those things, you know, that in life you realize, you know, what has happened and transpired in your career. And I just started shaking, going through withdrawals and literally crying. And my wife's sitting there. She's like, well, you know, what's wrong? And I'm like, I miss it. I miss the field. I miss the players. I miss all of that stuff. And, you know, it's hard to shake. And you're right. I mean, you know, once you're a coach and once you have it in you, you always feel like you can, you know, revolutionize the game. You can, you know, you become a little bit smarter. You become a little bit wiser, you know, and you feel that you can implement and teach that at the next level. And so, but, you know, I did. I thought that was just awesome getting a chance to talk with Coach Gilbertson and, you know, get to know Keith Gilbertson, the man.
And one guy that does not miss the field because he was there on Saturday on the field at Husky Stadium is Aaron Levine, the sports director at Q13 Fox in Seattle. Aaron, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks, guys. I was being neutral, by the way, on Saturday. I was wearing black, and it was a Husky blackout, correct?
Oh, my goodness. So you definitely beat me to it, because I was going to ask you, man, who are you rooting for? And I already know. You don't even have to say. But it was great that you wore the neutral colors.
Yeah, I was neutral. I'm like Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin, who are the honorary team captains in Stanford. It was pretty funny, though, to hear they were getting blasted on Twitter and other social media, fans, Husky fans, saying, you know, you're in Seattle now. You should be supporting our team. And I think, personally, that's a joke, considering, you know, they got to represent their alma mater. It's a team they played for in college.
That's the biggest joke that I've ever heard. You're right, because that's where they played in college. They're going to support their college. And get over it. You have a Super Bowl ring, Seattle. Let's not get, you know, so far ahead that, you know, guys can't root for their old alma maters.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I don't want to lump all Husky fans together, because there were a great majority of Husky fans that had their back. I mean, say, listen, this is completely normal for a couple of players to support their alma mater. In fact, there was just a picture of Mike Morgan and Malcolm Smith leading the USC Trojans out on the field in their game over the weekend against Oregon State. So, yeah, it's just part of the game. And this is one of the reasons why we see all these pro football players make bets with their teammates when their alma maters play every Saturday.
So the Huskies came in 4-0 under their belts. Of course, a couple of games were pretty close against the Hawaii and Eastern Washington. But what was the atmosphere like in Husky Stadium? I mean, it seemed like in the beginning that Stanford was ripe for the picking. And then, you know, as the game went on, of course, as we know in the fourth quarter, that's when, you know, Stanford got that final score. But what was that atmosphere like in Husky Stadium?
Well, the atmosphere was rocking. I absolutely love Husky Stadium. I mean, CenturyLink Field and Husky Stadium are two of the loudest stadiums I've ever been in. And you say the game was ripe for the picking for the Huskies for three quarters. It was ripe for the picking for all four quarters. as a Stanford fan, I've watched Stanford pretty much, you know, the last decade or so. And this game was the same exact game as the USC loss earlier this year, a game where they dominated on the stat sheet except for the scoreboard. And the fact that it was 13-13 going into the fourth quarter and midway through the fourth quarter when Chris Peterson called that fake punt, the ill-advised fake punt, which he has since apologized for on a 4th-and-9 at midfield, they were right in this game.
Yeah, Aaron, 4th-and-2, 4th-and-3, 4th-and-short, You can understand maybe why you would think that, but 4th-and-long, that made no sense at all.
Yeah, it made no sense to me either, because what you want to do, you had a struggling Stanford offense that still has not found its identity all season. But all game long, the Husky defense was smothering them. They had forced 3 turnovers as well. Why not pin Stanford deep in their own territory and put your defense to work like they had all game long? Maybe they can create another opportunity to get points on the board as opposed to giving Stanford a chance to get the ball at the 50-yard line and go in for a game-winning touchdown.
Now, Aaron, I can confirm I did not see you clapping, cheering, or barely even breaking a smile the entire game on the field. So you were definitely neutral.
Yeah, no, I'm not neutral, not deep inside. I mean, people see me at Seahawks games on the sideline, and I'm not clapping or cheering either. And they know, you know, where my true loyalties are. Obviously, I'm a huge Seahawks fan up here. So I think maybe it's I've been trained very well that I don't necessarily show my emotions outwardly, even though deep down inside I was rooting for my alma mater. But it's one of the toughest games of the year to deal with, that and the Wazoo game, because I am neutral up here. I'm a fan of the Cougs and the Huskies. I don't know if you can be, but I guess I am, because I cover both teams. We cover the Huskies a little bit more closely than the Cougs. But two of the toughest games of the year is when Stanford has to go up against those two teams.
Now, Aaron, in terms of the Huskies, why do you think their offense was having such a tough time getting anything going? It didn't look like anybody wanted to take over and help their team win.
Yeah, I would like to have seen the Huskies go vertical a couple more times just to test the Stanford secondary a bit more, but this is a Stanford secondary that hasn't allowed, I don't think, any touchdowns this season. Dwayne Aquina is their new secondary coach. He came over from Texas. He was the guy who coached Earl Thomas at the University of Texas, and he had glowing reviews from Earl when I talked to him about Dwayne Aquina, the secondary coach at Stanford. I think it was a bit of a product of the Stanford defense as well. I mean, they're no joke, and the fact that they lost guys like Shane Scove and Trent Murphy and Chase Thomas and Ed Reynolds all in one season, and they're even better than they have been the last couple of years, at least so far this year, is beyond me. But Lance Anderson's done a great job as defensive coordinator, so I wouldn't put it all on the Husky offense, but I would like to see them run a little bit east and west north and south instead of east and west, laterally. And I think there was a little bit too much finesse game. I'd love to see the Huskies kind of go more pro style the way Stark had them the last couple of years. I mean, the offense was never terrible. In fact, the last couple of years, the offense flourished under Stark. So that's some of the things that I would like to see as the Huskies move forward. And I don't know whether Peterson and Jonathan Smith are going to collaborate to move them in that direction or not.
Aaron Levine of Q13 Fox, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Aaron, before I ask you another question, man, I want to congratulate you, because the last time that you were on our show, you are a single man. And as a matter of fact, before, when we were interviewing you, you said you had to go to dinner because you were kind of doing two things at once at the time. And, you know, I appreciate you for being on the show, but I want to say congratulations, Sean Wally and myself. I want
to
say congratulations to you for marrying Shayna. And man, I tell you, you have just stepped your game up tremendously, man. And so, I mean, where does life go from here now?
Well, you say step on game up. I can easily say that I outkicked my coverage in that one.
Outkicked the coverage.
Yes. 3 months. 3 months ago, we got married, so that's great. And it was, we planned our marriage obviously around Seahawks season. So we were able to get a couple of weeks of honeymoon in there in July when the Seahawks facility goes dark before training camp. But it's been full go since then. Since July 26th, when training camp started, and just so exciting to be able to cover this team coming off of a Super Bowl championship and the highs and lows that come with that, and how long this season really is. I mean, it's amazing that we're only through week three or week four now with the bye week, and you have a 2-1 regular season record. I feel like I've been covering this team forever this season already. It really shows what it takes to win a Super Bowl championship. You have to have a little bit of luck, obviously, with staying healthy, and this is something that we are dealing with today and finding out about Zach Miller. He's probably going to be out at least a couple of weeks after undergoing ankle surgery this past week. But yeah, you have to be lucky. You have to be good as well. And I'm really enjoying seeing this offense with a healthy Percy Harvin so far, the number of weapons that Russell Wilson's been able to utilize. It's a fun team to cover. I think Russell had 11 different targets. He's utilizing everybody in that offense. Doug Baldwin came on Seahawks game day yesterday, and he talked about the patience that some of the receivers need to have on this team because Russell likes to spread it around so much. And while Golden Tate is off in Detroit catching 10 balls a game, you're lucky if you have 7 or 8 targets in one game if you're a Seahawks player.
Now, of course, Seattle with the bye this past weekend. Do you anticipate any type of rust coming out of going into this next game for the Seahawks?
You hope not. You never know, though. I think it was coming out of the bye week 2 years ago. They looked really rusty in Miami, and they came away with a loss. I think they did better last year. I think it was week 12. So was that the New Orleans game that they came back after last year?
I believe so.
Thoroughly dominated that game at CenturyLink Field. So it's interesting coming off of a bye and going on the road, having that extra day off because you're playing a Monday night football game in the nation's capital. It's always tough going up against a team that was embarrassed, and not only embarrassed, but at home. And that's what Washington was against the Giants on Thursday night football last week. So from a determination standpoint, you have to be wary of that as well. And you want the Seahawks to play a little bit better on the road because their only road game so far this year was in San Diego, a game they lost.
Aaron, it's going to be interesting next Monday night when the Seahawks do invade the nation's capital, because both teams almost sort of have a bye with the Redskins last playing Thursday night.
Yeah, and so you think it's an advantage. You have 14, 15 days off in between games. Well, that's only 3 or 4 more days than Washington had. So it's really going to be an interesting matchup. I think as bad as Kirk Cousins looked in that game against the Giants last week, he wants to prove something, considering RG3 is eventually going to be coming back, and who's the starting quarterback there? Is it Cousins or Robert Griffin III? Then again, you just have to worry about yourself, and this week I think that's what the Seahawks are focusing on. I love the fact that after the San Diego loss, Earl Thomas said that he found his championship spirit again. He might have lost it before, and it was clearly evident against the Denver Broncos that Earl Thomas was back. And loved, again, vintage Russell Wilson. In overtime, you felt like all the momentum was on Peyton Manning and the Broncos' side, and they have one drive to do it, put it in the end zone, and that's exactly what they do.
Aaron, across the street from CenturyLink Field is Safeco Field, as you know, and a season came to an abrupt halt yesterday as the Mariners missed the playoffs by just one game. Your monologue last night on Cue It Up Sports talked about how it was better, but now the bar is raised.
Yeah, and it is, because we're looking at a team that has missed the playoffs for the last 13 years, and they had been dreadful for about 6 or 7 of the last 8 years. This year was really, really fun to watch, I think, in general. It was frustrating as heck during September when they had multiple chances to earn a playoff spot, and getting swept one of those series and then losing 3 of 4 in Toronto in the last week, meaning they lost 5 straight games at one point when everybody else was struggling as well. Oakland basically wanted to give them the final wild card spot. But all in all, given the low expectations at the beginning of the season, you have to give the Mariners credit for hanging in there. But there really are no excuses, because as I said in the commentary last night, the last time that there were good vibes at Safeco Field following a regular season finale, Ichiro was being taken off the field on the shoulders of Carlos Silva, and Ken Griffey Jr. was being lifted up in the air, and everybody felt great that the next year was going to be their season, and they ended up with 61 wins the next year and 101 losses. that might have been the first team with 100 losses at $100 million payroll. So it's enough. Enough is enough in this city. And these fans, as you can see on that final weekend, and as you could see at night court when Felix Hernandez took them out 2 weeks ago, this city is desperate for a playoff contender when it comes to the Mariners. And this is inherently a baseball city when the Mariners are in contention. I mean, it's turned into a football city thanks to the Seahawks of the last couple of years, but you think back to 2001, you think back to 1995, those were big baseball years in the city, and this city can rally around a team, and they certainly deserve a winner as well.
So, Aaron, where do the Mariners go from here? Of course, they have a strong pitching staff. They have decent relief. So where do the Mariners go in the offseason to better themselves and to put themselves in a position to win the AL West?
It's all about offense. If this offense can finally give Felix Hernandez runs on days that he pitches, and on a more consistent basis, I think they average something like three and a half runs a game. They need to be able to average more than that. It's plain and simple. Go out, get more bats. They spent $240 million on Robinson Cano last year. You applaud ownership. You applaud management for doing that. But they needed more this year. And Kendrys Morales wasn't the answer. And clearly Austin Jackson wasn't the answer down the stretch either. And they need guys that in those clutch situations, when you're in the middle of a playoff race, can get you those runs and can get you those clutch RBIs. You look at the first game they won against the Angels when they had the bases loaded with no outs in the bottom of the ninth inning and they weren't able to get the winning run home. That's almost inexcusable. And the fact that they won the game is great, but then again, it's inexcusable in a situation like that to not be able to score a run when you have that situation.
Aaron Levine, sports director at Q13 Fox in Seattle. Follow him on Twitter at AaronQ13 Fox. As always, Aaron, thanks so much for your time and insight. Look forward to seeing you down the road at a game in Seattle.
Thanks a lot, and I think Russell Wilson would say it. Go Hawks.
Aaron Levine. There goes Aaron Levine, Q13's Fox. Man, Sean, the show has just been awesome. And of course, Aaron coming in and just raising the bar. That was some good stuff, man.
Absolutely, Sean. You know, Aaron is on point, you know, going back many years as we have talked about on this show, and you and I have talked with Aaron personally in Seattle, that, you know, going back to Dream Job, I mean, on ESPN, he's been on point and he knows his stuff. And as we all know, a Stanford graduate, so we know he's got the smarts. And it's been a great show, 72. So we come back, we'll touch on a few more subjects and wrap it up after this on The Double with the Double S Express.
I'm gonna hop some tags, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm looking for a come up. This is awesome.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret. A new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. It took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you found with the first flame.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express as we are closing in on the end of show 72. Sean Boyd.
Man, and we've talked about some awesome stuff. We got a chance to talk about college football, NFL, of course, and a little bit on Major League Baseball as well, of course. The postseason getting ready to start. Seattle Mariners coming up short. But Sean Wally, there's one more sport that we haven't covered, and I just have to do this. I have to do this for the city of Sacramento, and I have to send a shout-out to the Sacramento Republic FC for their inaugural season and winning the USL Pro Championship at Bonnie Field on Saturday. Sacramento Republic winning 2-0 against the Harrisburg City Islanders, and there was pandemonium, fanfare all around. There's no doubt about it, Sean Wally. There will be an MLS team in Sacramento. You can book it. And, man, look out for all the teams. I'm talking Portland. I'm talking Seattle. I'm talking San Jose, all up and down the I-5 corridor, that the Sacramento Republic is coming.
One question. Where are they going to play?
Well, I'm looking at an awesome, awesome structure. This is a beautiful-looking stadium. It looks like it's going to seat about 21,000. And it sounds like the Rail Yards is the place for it to be. This stadium, if you have the chance, go to SacRepublicFC.com to see the layout of this stadium. It is going to be the darling of the MLS, the best stadium bar none. Of course, Sacramento is putting themselves on the map with building the best NBA arena bar none that will be next year. And so there's some awesome things going on here in Northern California, Sean Wally.
And there's also, since this is Monday night, there's also a football game going on right now in Kansas City.
Well, I guess, in the word of a football game, you can call it that. Man, who would have thought the Kansas City Chiefs are just running it up on the New England Patriots? I mean, right now, I believe halfway through the just the beginning of the fourth quarter, 34-7, the Chiefs are putting a whooping on the Patriots, Sean Wally. Who would have thought?
Well, the big question is, since it doesn't look like the Patriots, who's going to take hold of the AFC East?
Wow, you know, that's a great question. I would have said the Buffalo Bills a couple of weeks ago because they started out strong and they started out fast. And, you know, it sounds like there's a quarterback rift going on in Buffalo to where E.J. Manuel might be, taking a seat. And, you know, I mean, who knows? I mean, the AFC East is definitely up for grabs.
You know, Sean,
after the Raiders got smacked around, it might as well be the Miami Dolphins.
Well, I know Dolphin fans have been waiting for that for a long time, and the Patriots have been in charge of the East for so long. It would be nice to see anybody else take a stranglehold on that division while Tom Brady and coach personality Belichick are on the bottom.
No doubt. But of course, the front runners in the AFC are none other than the Denver Broncos. And it looks like the San Diego Chargers are actually putting together a nice string. But, you know, there's still a lot of season left. Of course, there's a lot of season left. There's a chance for San Diego to pull a San Diego, if you will. And so, you know, they have a lot to prove in order to, you know, actually get that label. And there's one more team in the NFC that is right along the lines of San Diego, and I've said this before. You know, the Dallas Cowboys, and I know Dallas fans, I know. We have Cowboy listeners, and, you know, every time the Cowboys win, you know, the whole world is supposed to stop and thank Dallas for winning their football game.
And bow.
And, Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, but Dallas had, you know, put together a great game yesterday, and they're playing good football right now. But again, it's early in the season. But right now, it looks like San Diego Chargers, Denver Broncos, and AFC. Of course, NFC, gosh, I don't even know what to tell you, man. I mean, the Seattle Seahawks just look like they're going to run away with this whole thing. Green Bay, though, Sean. Green Bay got themselves back into the winning graces of the Lambeau faithful. I mean, just mollywhopping on the Chicago Bears yesterday, 38-17. Aaron Rodgers looking like, you know, that bad man that he is. Gosh, where did I get that from? But, you know, he had a great game yesterday, and, you know, the team looked like they're trying to turn it around.
Sean, I think you better hashtag mollywhopping and throw that out on Twitter and see how viral that gets. Goodness, that's awesome. And, yeah, the Packers look like they finally woke up. You know, they've kind of been treading water so far this season, and then bang, the Chicago Bears are the elixir that heals them. Sean, have you heard the record for one Jay Cutler, the quarterback of the Bears, facing the Green Bay Packers?
You know, I haven't, but once you said that, I had to chuckle because I'm sure that it's something outlandish. But what's his record?
Sean, in 10 games against the Packers, Jay Cutler is 1-9.
Jeez. Wow. That's amazing. That is amazing. So, you know, he has to have this feeling that, you know, whenever he plays the Green Bay Packers, no matter where it's at, home, away, or in the streets, that he's going to come out nicked up quite a bit.
Well, Sean, one thing we have not touched on yet is to congratulate the Oakland Athletics for taking the final wild card spot in the AL and playing the Kansas City Royals tomorrow, Tuesday, in Kansas City for the right to get to the ALDS.
You know, well, thank you very much, Sean Wally, for the congratulatories. You know, but I'm right along the lines with Aaron Levine on this one. I mean, for the Seattle Mariners, it was ripe for the taking to get into the postseason. The Oakland A's showed the most futile second half in Major League Baseball history, you know, having the best record in the major leagues going in after the break and just, you know, falling apart beyond no end. And so, you know, yeah, the Oakland A's have made it to the postseason. I'm happy that they have, but you talk about backing in. You know, they have backed in the worst way. And, you know, and Kansas City as well. I mean, Kansas City, you know, they had to fight their way back into contention and they got themselves into the wild card spot. But that last 2 weeks of the season, it seemed like no team wanted to take over. And, you know, Seattle, it was there for you. And I'm just going to harken back to one series before the Mariners played the Los Angeles Angels. And if they could have just mustered up 2 out of 3, then they would be in a position right now playing in the playoffs for Major League Baseball.
Well, the biggest gut wrencher for me as a Mariner fan is last Thursday when Taijuan Walker is on the mound in Toronto, lights out, shutting Toronto down left and right. The A's lose. Kansas City lost. So you can gain ground on both of them, which would have meant A's Mariners tied, and they would have been playing tonight in Safeco Field for the chance to go to that wild card game. And the Mariners couldn't muster one run.
You know, it was more than that. And, you know, Aaron touched on this as well. Of course, even though the Mariners swept the Los Angeles Angels, you know, there was a chance with the bases loaded, the ninth inning, with no outs, for the Mariners to end that game right then and there. And Jackson is up, And all he has to do, it wasn't just him, but there were three other people. Of course, Jackson got the redemption in the 11th inning. But you're talking about leaving, you know, runners on the pond or on the base path and having that chance to win and not having enough to just get that one run. You know, it's kind of a microcosm, and that is the reason why the Mariners were in the position that they were. And so, you know, I think things wound up, you know, I can't say that they wound up in, you know, the best way, because I thought the Mariners were going to win. I mean, I'm sorry, the A's were going to win the AL West, but they are back in the postseason for the third straight year. They have a chance to make a right. You know, they have a strong pitching staff that just hasn't put it all together. And, you know, I think that it's their chance. You know, my big question to you is, Sean, is after Felix pitched yesterday, and if that scenario did rear its head, Felix pitches in this final game of the season, if they have a one-game playoff, who do the Mariners trust as far as going out for that next game? I mean, it's not like Randy Johnson was going to come out and, you know, pitch 2 days in a row, or almost like what he did back in 95 where he only took 1 day's rest and came back 2 days later. Who was going to, you know, finish that one off if they made it to the postseason, you know, to get that one game win?
Well, I do think the big unit is available, so that could have happened. But it hands down, it would have been Taijuan Walker. He was ready. He last pitched on Thursday in Toronto, so he would have come back today had there been a tiebreaker game with Oakland, or had they won out and moved on with Kansas City. Tomorrow, it would have been Taijuan's turn. So, I mean, you obviously can't go with Felix. He pitched yesterday. You know, Chris Young was available, but he has been faltering down the stretch and was removed from the rotation the last couple weeks of the season. So those were your two options, and the better pitcher at the moment is Taijuan Walker.
So, yeah, so, of course, Seattle regroups, goes into the offseason, and it sounds like, you know, we're all putting our, you know, owners' hats on, and, you know, it's going to be up to finding a bat or two or maybe three for the Seattle Mariners. And, you know, look forward to them having a not a repeat season, but a season better than they had this year.
And, Sean, it was a good weekend for you and I working games this past weekend. Of course, as we discussed, I was at the University of Washington for Fox Sports, the national broadcast, Stanford at Washington, and you were at Levi's Stadium as well for Fox Sports on the NFL side, the Eagles and the 49ers, and we've got another exciting sports working weekend coming up here this next weekend.
Yeah, big weekend. Of course, you know, I will be in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium again. You know, the 49ers are looking to get above 500, and so that should be a lot of fun. Of course, CBS is in town, so I look forward to working with CBS. And, of course, you will be up in Seattle, I believe, again, Sean Wally.
No, a little bit further east.
Okay, so Washington State University, and who's coming into town?
The California Golden Bears made Martin Stadium a good Pac-12 battle. 2 days of TV work for the Pac-12 networks.
Man, I look forward in a couple of weeks, you know, my Oregon Ducks coming down and taking on Cal Berkeley. And that's October the 13th or the 14th. I don't have that in front of me, but I look forward to that as well as, you know, Oregon invades Berkeley.
Look at you, my Oregon Ducks. They're your son's Oregon Ducks. Hey, they're David Massey's Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, he's my son, and they're my Oregon Ducks. Just like I have my Auburn Tigers and my Eastern Washington Eagles.
And if they all played each other on the same day, on the same field, what would you do? Root for the winner?
Hey, we all know what happened, you know, a couple of years ago in the national championship, and I told my son that was going to happen. So I said, if Auburn wins, then it's great for me. And if Oregon wins, it's great for me because you're my son. But if I win, it's going to hurt for you. And sure enough, the Auburn Tigers took care of business, national champions. Cam Newton doing his thing. And so to answer your question, it's flat out Auburn War Eagle all the way.
And Sean, next Monday, it's going to be very, very trying and painful for me to do a show, considering the Seattle Seahawks will be on the world's eye Monday Night Football in Washington, D.C.
Well, man, good luck with that, because we're going to be here and we're going to be giving some great, great sports. So, you know, a lot of our listeners, you know, take the time out to listen while I'm watching Monday Night Football as well, and I'm sure you will do the same. Show number 72 in the books. It's been a great one, Sean Wally. For Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd, along with Don Newsom, our engineer. We will talk to you next week. Have a great one, everyone.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.